You are Locked On Orioles, your daily Baltimore Orioles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey there, Orioles fans. Today is Wednesday, July 28th, 2021, and welcome back in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb, and coming up on today's episode, we will recap Game 1 of the quick two-game series between the Marlins and the Orioles at Oriole Park at Camden Yards as the Marlins hit the ball all over the ballpark in a 7-3 win over the O's, snapping Baltimore's three-game winning streak. Then we will continue taking a look at the Orioles draft picks. Today we move on to the Orioles' sixth round pick as they selected the shortstop Colin Burns out of Tulane. But he wasn't the only Tulane player the Orioles selected. They also picked up the right-handed pitcher Keegan Gillies in the 15th round as well. So we're going to talk about both of those players with Gary Smith, who covers Tulane baseball and watched these guys closely for their entire careers at Tulane, and that's going to be coming up a little bit later to talk about those two draft picks. But that is all coming up on this episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast, which is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Download the app and join me every week to talk Orioles and get in on the action at Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. So today we start things with another Orioles loss, and it ends the quick winning streak after the sweep of the Nats this weekend. The Orioles had won three in a row, but they fall 7-3 to the Marlins last night in Game 1 of a quick two-game series. Orioles now 34-65 on the season, and you know, it was just a lot of offense from the Marlins and not a lot of great pitching from the Orioles in the ballgame last night. But going to get you the five things you need to know from the Orioles' 7-3 loss to the Marlins. And the first thing you need to know is that the Spencer Watkins train, well, it ran out of steam last night a little bit. And I think we expected this to happen. It's not like he was absolutely horrendous, but obviously he was not nearly as good as he had been in his first three career starts. Watkins in the game Tuesday night, 4 innings, 4 runs, 9 hits, just 1 strikeout, 1 walk, 1 home run allowed. He threw 87 pitches and his ERA up to 3.10 on the season. And basically the issue for Watkins is that, you know, the location was not where it's been so far this year. I mean, he was pinpoint with his command and control in his great start at the Trop against the Rays last week. Just wasn't the same thing this week. Again, you know, he went mostly four-seam fastball and cutter. He threw 55% four-seamers, 31% cutters. I mean, of his 87 pitches, he threw 7 changeups, 5 curveballs, and the other 75 pitches were either the four-seamer or the cutter. He likes to throw, you know, either of those fastballs. And again, you know, he still got 10 called strikes on the fastball. He got 4 whiffs on that pitch as well, but just 6 whiffs in 87 pitches, and 4 on the four-seamer, 2 on the cutter, none on the change of the curveball. Those pitches were not even strikes at all day. So really, he was pitching out there with 2 pitches. And that's the thing, you know, he was still fastball heavy in his good starts, but his changeup and his curve, he was able to drop in there for a strike every once in a while, maybe get a swing and miss a couple of times. That was not the case. He basically became a fastball cutter pitcher. You can't not have off-speed stuff if you're going to be a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. And Spencer Watkins clearly just did not have his off-speed stuff for whatever reason on Tuesday night. And kudos to him for at least getting through the 4 innings without any off-speed stuff. And, you know, he could have gotten out of here a little bit better in this start. I mean, you know, 2 on, 2 out in the second inning. He has Sandy Leon, who has just been horrendous this year. A 488 OPS for Sandy on the season, and that is after a 2-for-5 in last night's game. And he just kind of hangs a 2-2 changeup, and again, just not having his off-speed stuff, not where he wanted to put it. And Sandy Leon hits a 3-run homer to give Miami a 3-0 lead in the second. If he makes a better pitch there, he puts away Leon. You know, maybe he, you know, only gives up 1 run through 4 innings, and maybe he gets deeper into the ball game. Again, it wasn't terrible. They're not going to take him out of the rotation. Spencer Watkins is already scheduled to start the game on Sunday in Detroit to finish that series. And we'll see if he can get those off-speed pitches back, because the fastball still wasn't bad, but command was a little off and he just didn't have that changeup and that curveball. Second thing you need to know from the game sticks with the pitching. We saw Sean Anderson pitch again for the Orioles. Remember, they claimed him off waivers for the Texas Rangers a couple of weeks ago, the right-handed pitcher. He has just been horrendous this season. And the second thing you need to know is just, I feel like he might have been the worst pitcher that we have seen on the Orioles so far in this rebuild. The 26-year-old right-hander, since coming over to Baltimore, he's now made 4 appearances, an inning and 2/3, 3 runs, 2 innings, 4 runs, 1 inning, 4 runs, and last night was his best one. Still wasn't good. 2 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, 2 Ks and no walks, which was better, but man, the first batter he faced after he came on for Spencer Watkins in the 5th inning just serves up a 94-mile-per-hour fastball right down the chute, and Lowen Diaz hits it out to right center field for a solo homer that put Miami up 5-1 at the time in the 5th inning. And again, he got through 2 innings and pitched a little better after that. But man, I posed the question on Twitter, is this the worst pitcher that the Orioles have had in this rebuild? And I got some other good answers. But if you'd like to weigh in, tweet us at Locked On Orioles because it's a tight race at the top. And Sean Anderson is right there. He needs to be DFA. There's plenty of arms in AAA who are much more deserving and are either prospects that the Orioles need to get a look at, or frankly, just guys like Anderson who are waiver claim guys. Dustin Knight, for one. He has a 0.77 ERA in Norfolk. He just got another save last night and did his famous backflip. Actually, the ERA is now under that. It's about 0.75 on the year. Call him up. I don't want to watch Sean Anderson anymore. The stuff is not good. The location is not good. It's just hard to watch. Third thing you need to know from the game, let's stick with pitching as well. Connor Green made his major league debut in the ball game. Green, who the Orioles signed to a minor league deal this offseason, one of the many pitchers they did, who did struggle a little bit in AAA Norfolk throughout the year, but the 26-year-old right-hander ended up making his debut after he was called up on Saturday, but did not pitch until last night. And, you know, Green gives the Orioles a little bit of length, 2 innings. He allows 1 run on 2 hits. He struck out 2, no walks. He threw 37 pitches to get through those 2 innings. And again, he wasn't horrendous. You know, he gave up an RBI single out there in the 7th inning, or excuse me, in the 8th inning off the bat of Jesus Aguilar. That extended the Marlins' lead to 7-3. But otherwise, you know, he was solid on the mound, and I don't know if he's a long-term piece for the Orioles, but it's something to look at. You know, he is a guy who throws hard. He ended up really mixing his pitches as well. You know, he did throw about 20 fastballs. You know, some of them come in as sinkers, some of them as four-seamers. But, you know, he was averaging about 97, maxed out at 99 a couple of times with the fastball, and including with his first career strikeout where he went 98, 99, 99. And, you know, he's got a slider, he's got a changeup, he's got a curveball. He's got a plethora of pitches, and he showed in the game he can throw them all for strikes. He got 6 whiffs on the day, some on the changeup, on the slider, on the fastball. It's interesting stuff, and it'll be interesting to see if he sticks in the Orioles organization maybe past this season. You know, if the O's would maybe refine that arsenal, because he really almost throws 5 pitches at this point, and if they see him as a reliever, which we're not sure if they do yet because, you know, he's been kind of more of a starter in Norfolk so far this year, but if they see him as a reliever, if they try to refine that to maybe, you know, fastball, changeup, slider, and see what they could turn him into. But I was at least intrigued by Green's performance on Tuesday night. Fourth thing you need to know from the game, we flip to the offense, and the Orioles' top 3 in the order, their 3 big bats did all they could in this game to try and get a W. Cedric Mullins, Austin Hayes, Trey Mancini hitting 1-2-3 in the lineup, and they tried to get it done. Cedric Mullins 2-for-4 with a single and a solo home run, hit his 17th blast of the year in the 6th inning that made it a 5-2 game. You had Austin Hayes 1-for-4 with a solo home run. He hit it to lead off the 4th inning to get the Orioles on the board. And then Trey Mancini 2-for-4 with 2 doubles on the day. He had 3 hard hit balls. Between the 3 of them, they had 7 hard hit balls. That's balls with exit velocity of 95 miles per hour or more off the bat. They were swinging it well in the ball game, and they did all they could at the top of the lineup, but not a lot more production on the bottom side of the lineup for the Orioles, and that's pretty much why they couldn't get the W. And the fifth and final thing you need to know from the Orioles' 7-3 loss to the Marlins is, you know, we've maybe kind of run the course on Domingo Leyva. He had another 0-for-3 with a strikeout in the game last night, hitting ninth. He's down to a 130 average, a 403 OPS. You know, he's had some moments. He's hit the ball okay, but not like the defense is anything elite. It's nice that he can play second, short, and third. That obviously helps out the Orioles in a pinch. And, you know, he's still a switch hitter, still 25 years old, and I would like to see him, you know, stay in the organization. You don't have to DFA him off the active roster. You can send him down to AAA, but, you know, we continue to call for Jamai Jones, and that seems like the easiest move right now is Leyva struggling. Send him down to AAA, call up Jamai Jones, have him play second base. That's where Leyva played on Tuesday night, second base with Franco back at third, Urias at short, Jamai Jones at second. That infield looks a lot better that way. But the Orioles do lose 7-3 to the Marlins. It snaps their three-game winning streak. But, you know, still probably feeling good, at least at the minor league level and at the Mike Elias level, because officially after yesterday, the Orioles have now signed all 21 of their draft picks from the draft a couple of weeks ago, which means all 21 players they brought in will be, at least in some capacity, in the minor leagues and starting their career with the Orioles this season. And we wanted to continue our draft breakdown series looking at two more of the Orioles draft picks, two players they took out of Tulane in this year's draft. The first is the shortstop Colin Burns, who the Orioles drafted in the sixth round, and the second is the right-handed pitcher Keegan Gillies, who the Orioles scooped up in the 15th round. And to tell us about these two guys and their fantastic 2021 seasons at Tulane, and frankly their great careers with the Green Wave, we welcome Gary Smith into the podcast. He covers Tulane athletics for the New Orleans Advocate, and Gary joins us to tell us about Colin Burns, Keegan Gillies, and their careers at Tulane and what they could bring to the Orioles. That's coming up after the break. So we'll get to our conversation about two of those Orioles draft picks in just a second, but first, this episode is brought to you by Spotify Green Room. Spotify Green Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. I will be hosting rooms for Locked On Orioles once a week. Yes, you can finally join in on the conversation you listen to here every single day. You'll find fans on Green Room just like you for watch parties, debates, post-game breakdowns, and of course, reacting to the big news or rumors. It's the perfect place to start or join conversations about the league. So go download the free Spotify Green Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the MLB group for the latest league updates. And follow me at Connor Newcomb to be notified when my room goes live. I know you won't want to miss it. I'm planning to be live every single week to talk about the O's, and I can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts on the Orioles. See you there at Spotify Green Room, changing the way we talk sports. All right, so we welcome Gary Smith into the podcast. He covers Tulane athletics for the New Orleans Advocate, and he is here to talk about two Tulane baseball players who the Orioles drafted in this year's MLB draft. And first of all, Gary, thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Glad to be on it.
And so we want to start with the higher draft pick for the Orioles of the two guys, and that is Colin Burns, who the Orioles took in the sixth round of the draft last week, a redshirt sophomore infielder out of Tulane. So first, starting with Burns, you know, obviously it was just an unbelievable offensive season in 2021. Kind of, you know, what changed for him? What allowed him to get to this level where he was, you know, an okay to solid hitter, you know, in the lineup his first 2 years, and then became, you know, one of the best hitters in the AAC in 2021. Yeah.
It was probably the most remarkable transformation I've seen since I returned to New Orleans and started covering the team full time in 2010. This is a guy who had never hit a home run in college going into this season. He had only hit his career high for doubles was 3. This season he hit 20, led the American Athletic Conference, hit his first home run, then kept hitting some more, ended up with 8 home runs. He was always a really good fielder. I did not see this coming from him. It was just basically just hard work and belief. He's always had a lot of belief in himself. He was not a big recruit coming out of a local high school in New Orleans when Tulane got him. But he just had a fantastic year. I think the question going forward is going to be, is that power sustainable? Cause it really did come out of nowhere, but it was consistent all year long. This guy, he hit 353. He was just, he was one of the best players in the American Athletic Conference from start to finish this year.
I mean, you know, I'm sure there was little adjustments he made to have this happen. Did he get any bigger, you know, physically between the last couple of years? Was there big swing adjustments, or did it just seem like everything finally clicked for him?
Yeah, just everything finally clicked. I mean, of course, weight training, everything else, he got bigger, but it wasn't anything noticeable where you think, wow, this guy's he's got a changed body now. You know, I think part of it was the COVID shortened last season. He had a slow start, but there wasn't, it was just a small sample size. I think he felt like he would have had a much bigger year last year than he did. And then the season got cut short. So that's part of it. And his freshman year, he didn't really play a whole lot. So that may play into it. But no, I can honestly say there was not something where in the preseason I wasn't writing stories about how Colin Burns had transformed his body and was going to become the top draft pick on the team. No, I didn't see that coming. He did it himself. He just had a remarkable year.
Now, the one thing that did come with his transformation is seemingly a good amount more strikeouts and not, you know, too many walks. You know, just compared to the average, you know, the on-base percentage wasn't as sky high, I'm sure, as some guys who were drafted around him and even drafted by the Orioles. Is that, you know, something that came into his game too? Because it's not like his strikeout numbers were very high at all the first 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, as part of it, he was taking bigger cuts at the ball. They needed him to do that because he was coming through so often. But again, that's the big question for him going forward is, was this huge production at the college level sustainable going into the pros? It's always a concern when it's 1 year that this happened. And with him, I'd say that his fielding, I wouldn't say he's a flashy fielder, but he's just incredibly solid. He makes every play he's supposed to make as a shortstop. The hitting, you're right, the strikeouts went up. He was hunting, sometimes it looked like he was hunting big shots, gap doubles, stuff like that. But that's what the team needed. And boy, did he clip in the conference tournament in their second to last game. He had a grand slam to help them come back from a big deficit and had 7 RBIs in 1 game. So it worked for this team, what he was trying to do. But yeah, that would definitely be my question with him is was this year a blip going forward, or was this really what he's capable of doing at the professional in the minor leagues? And I'm honestly not sure.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, at the very least this year, he turned himself into, I mean, the ideal leadoff hitter, obviously, for Tulane, and coming from a guy, you know, as we've talked about, basically known as a defense first infielder who you took the hits when you got it. So, you know, on that defensive side, you know, you've talked about it already, just being a solid overall defender. And, you know, at shortstop, was he ever at another position when he was younger? Did he play anywhere else on the diamond? And kind of, you know, do you see him, you know, staying at that shortstop spot he played for Tulane?
I think he'll stay at shortstop. Can't swear to it, but that's the only position he's played at Tulane. I'm sure he could play second base, but he got his attention because of his glove originally. And again, he's not going to make those flashy plays. He's not making diving stops, stuff like that consistently, but he makes every play that's makeable. And Tulane has the artificial turf, which helps fielding percentages a little bit, but 5 errors for the entire season, starting basically every game, showed how consistent he was as a defender.
Yeah, and the Orioles will obviously, you know, take that as well with all of these great offensive numbers. But one more question on him before we get to Keegan. I just want to ask, you know, I would assume that the coaching staff after years 1 and 2 probably figured, you know, we maybe have a 4 or 5 year guy here who can start for us. And then, you know, this season comes out there and all of a sudden he's shooting up draft boards. Was there kind of a moment in the season where it felt like, you know, this isn't just a hot start, this is real. And, you know, he's going to be picked and he's going to be gone after 3 seasons.
It did about 2/3 of the way through the year when he was leading the conference in doubles and then started hitting home runs after that. And it was just the consistency from him all year. I mean, Tulane had a freshman catcher, Bennett Lee, who hit over 400, had one of the more remarkable years you're ever going to see. So I can't say Colin Burns was Tulane's best player, but he was definitely Tulane's most consistent player. And he was, but yeah, I'd say from not even being on my radar, and I don't think he was on the coach's radar. They praised him going into the year. They knew he was going to have a big year, but about two-thirds through the year, when you see this guy leading a pretty good baseball conference in doubles and with the average he had and starting to show some power combined with the fielding, you had a feeling that there was a good chance he was going to be gone after this year. It wasn't until I started seeing some draft ratings for him that I thought he'd go as high as the sixth round. I was thinking he would be more like a 10th round type of guy, but it was pretty clear that this was going to be his last year by the end of the regular season.
And the Orioles obviously love that hit tool. And, you know, for the O's, it's a lot of seeing how much he progressed from 2020 to 21 and them just salivating and thinking, how much more can we get him to progress as a hitter? But I did want to switch gears to Keegan Gillies, who of course was the second Tulane player who the Orioles drafted. They took him in the 15th round, which I thought was, you know, just from numbers and stuff was a little lower than maybe he had expected to go. And it felt like a little bit of a steal for the Orioles to get him here. Now, obviously, you know, he is an older pitcher who, you know, spent five seasons in college with Tulane. But, you know, I have to ask about this 2021 season because he was, you know, an okay starter, you know, an okay reliever at times, but he seemingly just became a lockdown, you know, bullpen pitcher this year with an ERA under one.
Yeah, I mean, this is another guy who was lightly recruited coming out of high school. I would really call him a failed starter. He had one his second year. He had a solid year, a 3.36 ERA, pitched 80 innings, came back the next year and just got lit up. There's no other way to put it. He gave up just a ton of hits. He had pretty good control that year. People just were hitting him all year long. He changed it. He's a guy, I mentioned I didn't really see visibly the transformation in Colin Burns. This guy, after his 2019 season, he decided he had to be better. And he went to a training facility, increased his fastball speed. The coaches, he had no idea. He wasn't going to be in the rotation. They brought in a bunch of junior college guys. He was not going to be in the rotation in 2020. The coach decided, Travis Jewett decided to turn him into a closer. I'm not sure he was thrilled with that idea at first, but he went for it, and man, did it pay off. Last year, not so great, but again, such a short sample size with the season ending. This year, again, early on, wasn't that effective in the first month. In fact, the biggest game of the season, February 28th, Tulane's playing Mississippi State, eventual national champion at Mississippi State, trying to win the series. He comes in the ninth inning with a one-run lead to close it. Walks two guys, throws a wild pitch, and then gives up a two-strike single that loses the game for two runs. And he was absolutely devastated by that game. If Tulane wins that game, there's probably a chance they make a postseason regional. He then got slightly injured. He only pitched once in the next 3 weeks. He lost his closer role after that game. And then after that, he was absolutely lights out. And I do think he's a steal. I mean, this is a 6'8 guy who's throwing 96 miles an hour, and he learned to harness – he learned to get his secondary, his big sweeping curveball over the plate. He got control in his fastball. After that Mississippi State game, he pitched 23 and a third innings and gave up one run and struck out 40. I've learned over the years that guys always think they're going to go higher than they end up going in the draft, but the people around him were convinced he was going to go on the second day of the draft, that he was not going to fall past the 10th round. He fell to the 15th round, but it's a small sample size of 1 year, but I don't know. I mean, he was awesome this year. There's no other way to put it. His ending ERA was 0.96. His last appearance of the year, they're playing in the conference tournament. They're out of pitching. They're in a game to put themselves into the championship game. They should have started him, but they didn't because they were out of pitchers. So they bring him in. They're already down 7-0 in the fourth inning. He pitches 4 1/3 inning and strikes out 11. It was kind of an angry performance because they knew they weren't going to win at that point. But he was just lights out. That was basically the way he pitched from March through the end of the season. I don't know. He looked like he had major league stuff to me, more so than any Tulane pitcher I've covered since 2010 in that stretch and in the last two and a half months of the season. I don't know. I do think they're getting a steal.
I did want to ask about the stuff because you mentioned, you know, the 96 mile per hour fastball, the big breaking ball. But, you know, obviously, you know, when guys are starting pitchers, they have, you know, a bigger arsenal. And sometimes guys will go away from pitches when they go from starter to the bullpen. Did you notice him going away from certain stuff and maybe, you know, making his arsenal a little slimmer? Or did that not change when he went to the pen?
Yeah, he definitely lowered it. I mean, he relied on his fastball, but he has a sweeping curveball that can be extremely effective when he gets it over the plate. Last year and the beginning of this year, that thing was never a strike. So players, teams knew to lay off of that pitch. Once he started getting that over the plate, it just made his fastball that more effective. But there wasn't a whole lot of variety going on there, because teams just couldn't catch up to his fastball. And this is a big 6'8" guy on the mound, leaning forward, throwing those heaters. And I think he gave up one home run to Houston in a game where he saved it anyway, where they had a 2-run lead. And other than that, he was untouchable for those last 2 months. Again, I guess the small sample size would be a concern. And obviously it's a whole different caliber once you get to the minor leagues. But in terms of, I mean, that 96 mile heat, and just his size and just his man, he's an incredibly great guy. He's incredibly hard worker, does all the right things off the field. I like his chances to exceed that 15th round draft pick.
And yeah, with being a 5-year college player, he's obviously a lot older than a lot of these guys he's being drafted alongside, and with him already being moved to the bullpen, that's basically, the two boxes to check for him to, if he has success, move up the minor league ranks pretty quickly with the age and the experience in that role. And what you just talked about, as close to major league stuff as you saw this season. But Gary, thank you so much for joining us to talk about these two Tulane guys who the Orioles drafted, again, Colin Burns in the 6th round, Keegan Gillies in the 15th round. And of course, the Orioles took Hudson Haskin in the 2nd round last year. And It does kind of seem like Michael Eyes and his staff keying in on this Tulane program here recently.
Thanks for having me on.
So we're back to the Orioles talk in just a second, but first got to tell you about Built Bar and so many amazing, delicious flavors of the Built Bars. How about double chocolate? How about salted caramel? How about cookies and cream and many, many more? Now, it's tough to pick a favorite flavor that Built Bar has, but if you'd like to maybe lock down, a ranking for yourself of which ones are your favorite, you can try them all. You can go to BuiltBar.com. You order a mixed box. There you'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. Then you can make a solid decision. But not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, they're healthy too. Most of the bars, 17 or 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from just 130 to 180, only about 4 grams of sugar and 4 grams of net carbs. And Built Bar, it's the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. That's pretty cool. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 15% off your order. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. So our thanks again to Gary Smith, who covers Tulane Athletics for the New Orleans Advocate, for joining us to talk about 2 of the Orioles draft picks, both guys out of Tulane. Again, the shortstop Colin Burns, who the O's took in the 6th round, and the right-handed pitcher Keegan Gillies, who the Orioles selected in the 15th round. And, 2 interesting pickups, and Burns really interesting, the shortstop, because he was just kind of a light-hitting guy. He was hitting .263 in 2020 with, no home runs in 17 games. He was a part-time player hitting .217 in 27 games in 2019. Then all of a sudden, 2021, he hits .353, hits his first 8 career homers, hits 20 doubles. He's slugging .571. It's a change. He also stole 20 bases this season as well. Just another part of his game, being a great defender. Really interesting to see if he can continue to climb offensively and that power sticks. And then Keegan Gillies, this was one of the more exciting picks, getting him in the 15th round. The dude had a .96 ERA, 44 Ks in 28 innings here in the 2021 season. He throws in the high 90s. He's got a big overhand curveball. He is a big guy at 6'8", about 240. He is an interesting piece that could definitely move up pretty quickly in the Orioles organization. But 2 more exciting guys coming to the Orioles minor league system at this point, as it continues to get better and better, and obviously helps that the Orioles signed, again, all 21 guys that they took in this year's draft. But back to the major league level, Orioles do have another game tonight, the final of the quick 2-game series against the Marlins at Camden Yards. Going for Miami as they try to go for the sweep, it'll be the 25-year-old right-hander Jordan Holloway who will take the mound for his 13th appearance of the year. He has a 3.21 ERA, 32 strikeouts in 33 and two-thirds innings. He's kind of been moved between the bullpen and the starting rotation this year. He spent some time in AAA. He's been up and down. He's kind of been all over the place for the Marlins. Edwards, former 20th round pick by Miami in 2014. His last time out against the Padres, it did not look great. Again, a good offense, but he had really no command in that one. 3 2/3 innings pitched, 2 runs on 3 hits, but he walked 5 and he struck out just 1. Although that came off the heels of a start against Philadelphia in which he went 5 hitless innings, striking out 6. So it's been kind of up and down for Holloway this season. But Holloway, definitely an interesting pitcher on the mound. He's actually one of the few starting pitchers who actually, you know, throws his slider at a pretty close percentage to what he throws his fastball. He throws his slider about 42% of the time. It's about an 85 mile per hour slider. Opposing hitters hitting only 122 against it this season. They have only 6 hits against that slider this year. It is extremely effective. It's got a whiff rate of about 32%. That is the pitch he's going to throw up there a lot. Then fastball-wise, you know, he's 95 to 97 with the fastball. It's got some good late sink to it as well. And then he'll drop in a curveball and maybe a changeup from time to time, but you're mostly going to see fastball slider from Holloway, which is why I think many feel like he might project as a reliever long term, but they're still trying to turn him into a starter in Miami. So we'll see what the Orioles can do against him tonight. And for the O's, they will send Jorge Lopez to the mound. The 28-year-old righty will make his 21st start of the season. Man, he has really been in the rotation all year. He's got a 5.84 ERA, 88 strikeouts in 94 innings so far this year. Coming off a just classic Jorge Lopez start against Washington over the weekend, 4 2/3 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 3 Ks, and 2 walks. We'll see if he can maybe get himself through 5 innings tonight. That is always the goal for Jorge Lopez, is just get yourself through 5. Last time he did that, June 22nd against Houston, when he went 6 1/3. So that is tonight, Orioles and Marlins, game 2 of 2. O's will try and split this quick 2-game series. Then we will be back with you here on tomorrow's episode. We are going to obviously recap game 2 between the Orioles and the Marlins, and then we will continue taking a look at the Orioles draft picks. We go to round number 7, and it was the Orioles taking a catcher, Connor Pavloni, the starting catcher out of Tennessee, one of the best teams in college baseball this year. Pavloni had a fantastic season, both defensively and offensively as well for the Volunteers. John Wilkerson, the play-by-play voice of Tennessee baseball, who's joined us on this pod once before. He talked to us about Garrett Stallings late last year. He's back on the pod to talk about Pavloni, his 3 years at Tennessee, and what he could bring to the Orioles. So that's all coming up on tomorrow's episode. But until then, I'm Connor Newcomb, and this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.